Blog Talk Radio.
Child obesity has just gotten as
just blown up as it has, no pun intended, but globally, an estimated 43 million preschool children under the age of 5 were overweight in 2010. Now, that represents a 60% increase since 1990. So, I mean, that's 43 million preschool children. Now, we're not just talking toddlers. We're talking about, well, we are talking toddlers. We're not just talking about kids. We're talking about preschool children under the age of 5. Now, that's just globally. In the United States, I mean, it's gotten out of control. And for those who are tuned in, and I see you online, I see the phone lines are lit up. Dr. Lathan, so that people are really aware of what childhood obesity is, because some people might think that, oh, my child just might be a little chubby or they'll grow out of it or whatever. What is classified as first obesity? And then we can put it in the context of child obesity.
Sure. So it really follows a similar chart as we use for adults when we look at height and weight measurement charts to give you an idea of the range of where you should be for your height and weight, whether you have a small, medium, or large frame. So we have that for adults. For children, it's similar. We're basically looking at the body mass index, though, for boys and girls. And so there is a separate chart for boys and separate for girls, and basically considered overweight if they're higher than the 85th percentile. Between 85 and 95 is considered overweight. And that basically means you're going to have like a BMI for boys anywhere from like 26 to 29 or just under 29. Or like about 28, 29. So that's considered overweight. And then if it's in the 95th percentile, it means it's like 29 or over. That would be considered obese. It's similar for girls. It's slightly higher for girls. It's considered overweight again if you're in the 85th percentile or higher for body mass index. And that's usually if you're 26 and above. If your body mass index for a girl is 26 or above, it's considered overweight. And then if it hits the 95 percentile where it's 31 or above, then it's in the obese category. And so that's the basic guideline for, determining if someone is, if your child is overweight or not. And so you can calculate, the BMI. There are lots of charts online that you can just go to and just put in the height and weight, and it gives you the BMI. So if you're not sure, a simple Google search will give you that, and you can put in the numbers, height and weight, and it'll tell you what the BMI is. So that gives you an idea. So it kind of takes away some of the guesswork.
Well, I know that when we're talking about overweight and obesity, we know that food has a very large role, if not the major factor in that.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that, if you what you eat and what goes into your mouth is going to contribute to either your optimal wellness or your lack thereof. But you have a very interesting story that I want to just share with the listeners as to why you know so much about holistic health, because when we're talking about overcoming childhood obesity, we're going to be approaching this discussion from a holistic perspective. But just so that the people on the line who've never heard you before know what actually brought you to this holistic path. So, I mean, you're a holistic wellness expert, so that people know why you're an expert and how you became an expert and what qualifies you to speak so authoritatively on holistic health and childhood obesity and the role that food plays in that. Could you share with our listeners what actually brought you to the holistic health path?
Sure. It started with my own health challenges. I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer in 2007, and that was one of those life-changing events where I decided to pursue alternative treatment as opposed to what they were telling me to do, which was surgery and remove the thyroid and just be on medication. I didn't want to do that. So, you know, I heard of other people curing themselves from cancer using natural means. So I decided to research and figure out what they did or what would work for me. So I did that, started researching, came across plant-based diets repeatedly as a way to heal the body naturally. So I switched my diet to a whole foods plant-based diet where I was eating real food, got rid of dairy and meat byproducts and all of that, and went to a plant-based diet, but eating really whole foods, unprocessed foods, foods without all the additives, preservatives, and sugars. I was able to cure the cancer by changing my diet and lifestyle to less stress and meditation and all those things. In about a year, I was able to turn the cancer around with nothing but just diet and supplements and, like I said, exercise and meditation and prayer. So a lot of people wanted to know how I did it, what I did. And so I started teaching people. And then, you know, it just kind of changed what I wanted to do with my life, because so many people are going through the same thing with even more severe cases of cancer. I was like, you know, if we change what we put on our plate, we can solve a lot of problems that they're spending billions of dollars on, saying that there is no cure when the cure is really on your plate. And so, you know, I've made it my mission to spread that message so that people can take their health in their own hands and learn to heal themselves and prevent these diseases and stop dying prematurely of preventable diseases like diabetes, heart disease, stroke, cancer, kidney failure, all of these things that are taking us out, you know, so commonly. We don't have to suffer that fate. And so that's why I do what I do and, you know, just immerse myself in that information. So I love doing it. So it's what I do. It's what I study. And, you know, I'm here to help.
So how has your message been received when you started doing this? I mean, because there are so many potential clients, for lack of a better term. I mean, there's so many people out here that are sick and suffering from everything, you name it, under the sun, from every type of disease known to man, you know, somebody's got it. So there's a large, you know, there's a scripture that says the harvest is plenteous, but the laborers are few. You know, I mean, when you look at the harvest, how has that message of holistic health been received when you go out and you share the information? How's that been?
It's been received pretty well. I mean, people are looking for alternatives because they see the failures of traditional medicine. They see how many people are dying in spite of treatment for cancer and other things. They see that, and they see it for themselves, and they also see the trap of getting on, you know, 5, 10, 15 medications and the side effects of those. So most people are relatively open to hearing what the alternative approaches are. I mean, not everybody wants to change their diet or go plant-based or don't really have faith in it, and that's unfortunate, but, you know, the information is there. But for the most part, people who are suffering want an answer and they want a way out. So from the general public, it's been well received.
Wonderful. That's great news. Well, for everybody, again, that's listening online, I guarantee you when we get into this conversation, you may have a question or a comment. All you have to do is dial 347-324-5727. Again, that's 347-324-5727. And if you're already listening by phone, all you have to do is press 1, and then I can bring you on and you can ask your question. Again, tonight's show is about overcoming childhood obesity. You know, childhood obesity has been called one of the most serious public health challenges of the 21st century. I mean, that's a heavy, heavy statement. Again, one of the most serious public health challenges of the 21st century. It is a big deal. Again, no pun intended. And I just want to say that for all of the parents out there that are listening that have children that may have challenges with their weight, whether it's your child, whether it's a neighbor's child, or whether it's somebody you know, please share this information. When you get it, share it, because it could actually change a young person's life. Dr. Lathan, when it comes to children and eating a healthy diet. I mean, again, that's the foundation, correct? I mean, when it comes to child obesity, I mean, a child's not, or let me just ask the question, because someone might have it. Are children predisposed to having weight issues? Because I've known for a lot of times, whenever I saw a large family, whether the parents were obese, oftentimes, in many cases, the child tended to be large. I associate that with their eating the same food that the parents are eating. But just if I may ask a question for somebody out there that might have it, could a child be predisposed to having weight challenges?
I mean, there's always those cases. That is not the norm, though. Sure, there are instances where there might be some genetic predispositions, but that's very, very small. I would say less than 10% of the cases, definitely less than 10%, would be due to some genetic issue being passed down from the parents. So that means more than 90% is really based on lifestyle. And so, you know, I saw someone, you know, with a meme online that says, you know, diabetes runs in my family. And somebody said, that's because nobody runs in your family. That means, you know, and so a lot of times, not to make light of it, it's really the habits that we have that are passed down from generation to generation. So that's why we'll have a whole family that's overweight, you know, kids and aunts and uncles and all that, because they've all learned the same thing. They eat the same way. They generally have the same lifestyle pattern as each other. And so you get the same outcomes. So if you take that same kid and put them in an environment where they're eating healthy food, they're exercising, then that scenario is going to change really, really quickly. And it's also shown that, you know, what you eat has a much, much greater impact than the activity level. So I know we talk a lot about children playing video games, and that's not good all day, and that is a detriment. However, even if they got off the couch more, it's not going to solve the childhood obesity problem, unfortunately. It's going to take diet as being number one, coupled with movement and exercise, which just makes for a healthy child overall. Movement is important for everyone in every aspect of life. So that in itself is not going to solve the problem. It really is the food, and we just pass on not just the type of food we eat, but the way we eat. We eat sometimes, we have people who just don't understand that you need to stop eating when you're full and don't wait until you're stuffed. You can pass that down to your children to eat like that, just like you do, just by the virtue of doing it, and they're watching you, they do the same thing. Or, you know, you got to clean your plate, you got to eat this and that even when you're not hungry. The habits of just using food as a reward or to make you feel better starts really young too. So those it's generally the habits of the family that create the environment for obesity or lack of obesity.
Well, what about food and the mind? Because there might be somebody out there that has a condition that, let's say you might take a child who they just appear that they really can't stop eating. You know, they might hide food, they might, you know, sneak food, get up in the middle of the night and creep to the refrigerator and get food.
Right.
Could there be some mental condition that could contribute also to a child being obese, some sort of a mental thing?
Absolutely. I mean, it all works together. I mean, there are a lot of ways that we use food for various different reasons. And so if your child is sneaking food and doing all that's time to sit down and let's work this out, because something is going on. You know, maybe there's just some food insecurity that they feel like there's not going to be enough. You know, but that could stem from something of just not feeling loved and not feeling like they have enough love, and that manifests itself through food. That could be a sign of abuse. That could be a sign of, not saying that that is it. There are many reasons that could be happening, but oftentimes it has to do with how the kid feels about themselves, if they're feeling nourished, if they're feeling nourished without food, meaning nourished in their environment and their family. You know, there could be something going on at school where they're feeling insecure or feeling, you know, not adequate or feeling left out or something like that. It could, you know, and so we don't want to, you know, blame ourselves, but, you know, sometimes we miss things. And so we need, that's a sign to say, let's dig a little deeper, because these habits that we have with food generally do start early and they carry over into adulthood. So by the time you're a teenager or an adult, you might not have to hide the food necessarily or sneak it, you know, or some people do. They put all the bad food in, you know, somewhere around the house and under the mattress and places like that. That's still saying something is going on that needs to be addressed, absolutely. So it is a sign to say, let's dig a little deeper, let's talk, maybe let's go to counseling. Let's definitely see what's going on here. It's not to be ignored, but it's definitely calls for, at the minimum, a conversation and more attention to that child to see what's really going on and to see what maybe the triggers are.
Everybody, my special guest is Dr. Ruby Lathan. If you have a question and you're listening by phone, just press 1 and I'll bring you on and you can ask it. If you're listening online, again, the telephone number is 347-324-5727. Okay, Doc, well, let's talk about the toddlers. I mean, because the ones that are too young to really sneak food and, you know, like, again, an estimated 43 million preschool children under the age of 5 were overweight 2010, and again, that was a 60% increase since 1990. I mean, under 5, that's heavy. I mean, again, and I'm not trying to be funny when I say that, but that's deep, shall I say, that under 5, that you have preschool children that are considered obese. And when we talk about exercise, then you might have a parent that says, look, my child's 3 years old, you know, 4 years old, how much exercise can they get, you know, at that young age? So could you talk about things that parents could do when they have a child that is that young? Because that's really, those are the very formative years of that baby. And it appears to me that people don't really get slimmer as they get older. I mean, in some cases you have people that say, oh, that's just baby fat, they'll grow out of it. And maybe in some cases people do, but if you have a really obese child, chances of them growing out of that without some conscious changes being made is probably very slim.
Right, it is. You know, with kids who are not controlling what they eat, generally it's going to be what we're giving them. I mean, one thing is just simply overfeeding. And sometimes children make demands for food when they're not hungry, because they are just calling out, again, for attention or something else. If you just fed your child, you know, and it's less than an hour later, 45 minutes later, and they're like, I want this, that, and the other. Number one, we have to look at what we're feeding them. Are we feeding them addictive food, salty food, food that causes those kind of cravings, food with MSG? Those are the type of foods you're going to find at the fast food restaurants that have empty calories. So they actually, in some cases, if you're feeding them that kind of food, they might actually feel hungry because they got a bunch of empty calories, so they want more. And not only that, that food wires the brain to just want more and more and more, to overexcite the brain with those type of foods. So we have to, number one, look at what we're feeding the kid. If we're feeding them high fat, high salt, high sugar foods, that's a recipe for obesity. And so that would be the primary cause of the problem right there with what you're feeding them. And then there is the problem of just feeding them too often, too much, or feeding them late at night right before bed. Those type of things are going to cause weight gain. Mm-hmm. So it's really in the parents' control for children who don't have access to their own food. It really is up to the parents to make that change. And change to, instead of sugary cereals for breakfast, change to smoothies and have the kid help you make, you know, have your children help you make a smoothie. Because my experience working with young kids from kindergarten, first grade, first and second grade, they're very open to wanting to learn how to be healthy, wanting to be strong. When you explain to them why we eat apples, why we eat spinach, why we're putting this in a smoothie. They are excited about that. They want to do the right thing. And you explain to them why we're going to switch from eating McDonald's to eating this. There might be some resistance because their palates have been trained to like that, but they will change relatively quickly. And as long as you don't cave, it'll happen within about, you know, 3 weeks or so. So you got to switch what they're eating, because the food just sets your, if it's that type of food, highly processed food, then, you know, you're going to create an environment where they want more of it and want it more often, because that's the way the food is manufactured to make you feel. So, you know, if you're feeding them really healthy food, then it's time to go to the doctor and check things out. And it might just be you're feeding them too much. There may be not enough water, maybe more activity. But in general, it's usually traced back to poor food choices. You know, unfortunately, the cheap food is the worst food. And so they're not getting enough greens. They're not getting enough salads. They're not getting enough broccoli and spinach and, you know, fruit and all of that. Especially one of the main reasons kids are overweight is sugar. And we put it, you know, through the fruit juices, and that's juices in quotes, because a lot of times it's not really juice. It's juice water flavored like juice with just a bunch of sugar in it. So the first line of defense for a child who's overweight is to cut the sugar. Cut all juice, all soda. Any beverage that has sugar in it should be cut. That's going to cut down on the calories tremendously. A sugar turns to fat very quickly. And so all of those, you know, little Debbies and cookies and things that are so cute that we think it's okay to put in kids' lunch really, really isn't. And we need to save the sweets for special occasions and, you know, fewer times during the week. You don't have to deprive completely, but you want to choose a healthier sweet and make sure it's not every day, that this is standard practice, because that's not healthy and that's not the habit you want them to keep, you know, into adulthood. So, you know, you want to start with cutting the sugar, and then the refined carbohydrates would be next.
Well, what about economics, Doc? Because there are some people out there that, you know, when a lot of stuff is marketed to kids. I mean, you've got the dollar meal at McDonald's, you know, versus the salad that might cost, you know, $4 or $5 or whatever, and the double cheeseburger might cost $1, you know, and then they've got Ronald McDonald and a whole bunch of, you know, happy children, you know, jumping up and down in the commercial. A lot of stuff is marketed to kids, and what role do you think that that plays in just this whole epidemic?
Well, that's a good point. But so it is marketing, and that's all it is. Those companies are out to make money through killing your children. So you have to look at it that way. They could care less about happy kids. They just want addicted kids who become addicted adults, so they continue to shop at these fast food places, McDonald's and all the rest. And so studies have shown that when you can embed an image in a kid's psyche and mind early on, they tend to have an affinity for it for the rest of their lives. So the reason they're marketing to kids isn't because they want to feed the kids. It's because they know, if I can get in your brain at 3, 4, and 5 years old, something is going to draw you back to McDonald's when you're 22 and you don't even know it. You know, you're going to see this Ronald McDonald somewhere or hear the song, and it's just going to draw you to it. This is very, marketing is very, I don't even know the word I want to use. It's sneaky. It's sneaky is what it is.
Insidious.
Yes, insidious is very true. And so they purposely, and this is the same way they would market cigarettes to children, because they know if they get you hooked before, you know, you're a fully formed adult, it's very hard to quit. So they do the same thing with food. That's why they came up with things like Joe Camel. It wasn't to attract the 40-year-old man or woman to the cigarettes. It was to attract the 17-year-old or the 12-year-old to that cigarette, because then they know once they get you before you're like 21 that the instances of you sticking with them are going to be that much higher. They have a customer for life. So that is what the marketing is about. It's all about creating a customer for life. And unfortunately, if you're a customer for life, it's going to be a shortened life. And that's what they do. So the reason they have the playgrounds and all of that is not to entertain the kids. It's to create memories associated with their food. So now you create happy memories and birthday parties with McDonald's. You associate that. So then whenever you want to feel happy or good, where do you go? You're going to go there. And that is what's happening. So we have to protect our kids because they're too young to know that. So we have to protect them and, first of all, not let them watch tons of TV because they get marketed, just bombarded through commercials with all these sugary cereals and things. So, you know, we want to use, we've got all this technology with our TV where we can record programs and skip commercials, and you really should be monitoring what your kids are watching and how long. So you want to program what they're going to watch, and you can skip all that junk so that they're not sitting there being inundated with Pop-Tarts and all this other junk and then asking you for it in the store. That's number one. And then two, we just have to safeguard our kids and say, we don't go to McDonald's because it's going to make you sick. This is why we don't eat there. That's what you tell them, and you explain how that works, and they will follow you. They really will. Kids will do what you do. They will follow your lead, and even if they're addicted, in a couple of weeks they will, you know, feel better. They'll have more energy. They'll be better behaved if you get them off of the junk. So, you know, we have to protect our kids and ourselves from all this garbage marketing because it's just about making people rich on and making us sick in the process.
You know, and the stats are, you know, just bearing out what you just shared. I mean, in the U.S., 70.9% of men and 61.9% of women are obese or overweight, which ranks number one. That's the highest ranking in the world. Again, that's 70.9% of men and 61.9% of women are obese, and these people didn't just become obese, many of them, once they got grown, you know.
Yeah, let me tell you, I mean, I see this trend. I look back at, you know, my high school classmates, because we have this wonderful thing of Facebook, so we get to see people we normally wouldn't see years later, and person after person after person is huge. I mean, huge. And they didn't have this weight problem in high school. And, you know, dating myself a little bit, high school was in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So, late 80s. So we were all fine, you know. And so I'm looking at the trend of how food has changed since the early 90s till now. And the first genetic modification of food came along in about the early 1990s, 93. Was in it when it really started, and then from there, especially the early 2000s, is when it really took over. And so we saw a change in our food supply. We also saw a drastic change in the amount of sugar, dairy, and meat consumption go way up at the same time. So over the past 40 years, we're eating way more sugar, way more dairy, cheese, and way more meat than we were, you know, 40 years ago. And so to me, that accounts for this. And then you add on top of it the increase of genetically modified foods where it wasn't there in the 80s, but it was barely there in the early 90s. And you add that on top of it, I was like, because it can't be that everybody just turned into lazy couch potatoes and started overeating. It cannot be. Not everybody has a food addiction problem. I mean, that is for a lot of people that come home. They eat, you know, eat their problems away, and they become obese. But I'm like, that is not that's not as common as we think it is. And so I said, something else is going on here, and it has to be the food. So we've gone to a society where we don't cook. Most people that I talk to eat out a lot, and the food where you eat out a lot, it's not the same as eating out in 1989. when you eat out in 2009 and 2015, the food is drastically different. It's garbage food now. They use oils that are genetically modified. They use oils that cause inflammation in the body. They use tons more MSG, which causes an addiction to the food. The food is overly salted. Sugar is put in everything, which causes weight gain in and of itself. And then we're doing things like big gulps and super fancy lattes, which are just sugar bombs that we're having for breakfast. So that is why there's been an increase in this weight problem. And the problem is our kids, the reason the kids now have such childhood obesity problems, because we didn't have that when I was growing up. There might have been one overweight kid in the class. And that's usually how it was. Maybe one, maybe two. That was about it. But now it's like half the class. And that is because they are growing up on this garbage food. So they're growing up on this processed food that we didn't grow up on. And so that is why childhood obesity is rampant. And then we have this idea that it's okay to feed kids junk because they're going to burn it off. You know, like, oh, you know, I'll go to people's house, you know, we're doing some nutrition coaching, and I'm seeing, you know, chips and cookies and all these little things and snack size packages, and I'm like, well, what's this? Or like, oh, that's for the kids, you know, they can eat that stuff. I'm like, you see the problem you're having with food. Why would you train your child to like this type of food on a regular basis and to eat it on a regular basis? It is not okay to feed kids junk because they're going to burn it off. You are setting them up for disease, and you're setting them up for a habit of craving that. And as they get older and you get less active, then the weight starts adding on. So you know, you're eating the same amount of junk you were eating. Now you're not playing football and volleyball, and you're not running and skating and riding your bike, but you're eating the same amount of calories and maybe more, so you gain weight, but you have your cravings are still the same. You still want to eat at McDonald's like you did as a kid. You still want to eat at Wendy's and all these other places that your parents fed you and said it was okay because you were a kid. But when does it change? When do you wake up and say, you know what, I'm not going to eat McDonald's anymore. I'm just going to start having smoothies for breakfast and not Egg McMuffins. I mean, that's a hard shift when you're raised on that. So we have to not train the kids to like this stuff early, and because it's really, like, to me, almost a form of abuse or just maltraining. This lack of knowledge, I think, that we think it's okay, you know, because they're, you know, we'll have some kids that are slim, and so we'll give them junk and think it's okay, but you're really setting them up for problems later on, because studies have shown that people start developing hardened arteries and heart disease as early as 7, 8, and 9 based on what they're eating. So you can have a slim kid who has partially hardened or clogged arteries already because they're eating a diet of cheese and bread and sugar and meat, mostly, and very little vegetables. And we cave when they say they don't want to eat their vegetables, and we think that's okay. And so you're actually setting your kid up for this heart attack that they might have at 44. This is what, because it started when they were 7.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's so important to train kids early and realize that packaged food is, you know, the simple as I can put it is it's garbage food. So it's meant to be the cheapest food possible so they can make the most money off of it. It has zero to do with nutrition. They could care less. So it's like, what can I make that tastes can, meaning it overexcites all of our taste buds for sugar, salt, and fat. So that's the formula, sugar, salt, fat. How can we enhance that so that this person keeps coming back and buying this food over and over and over? So you have to understand that food production has been hijacked by just nefarious moneymakers, and we have to say, stop, I'm not falling for that trap.
You know, listening to you, Doctor, it really appears that there has to be a whole education job, food education campaign, even, to re-educate the people concerning the healthy food practices, because, again, people oftentimes don't even consider the link between what goes into their mouth and the condition that they may be dealing with. You know, it's just sometimes mm-hmm. they just don't get it that, hey, what you're putting in your mouth is either going to affect you in a positive way or it's going to affect you in a negative way. And I think that education process needs to start very, 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 very early.
Very early. Yeah, before the habits are formed. Because, you know, I've had parents say they had kids who were ADD, just had real nasty attitudes. You know, we're thinking, oh, it's the preteen years, they're being a tween. And she said she changed one thing. She changed breakfast from, you know, the typical, you know, Eggo waffles and all that junk and sugary cereal to, because I used to eat all that sugary cereal. We didn't know. We'd have, you know, you put so much sugar in it, there's like a tablespoon left at the bottom when you're done.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
That is terrible. That sets you up for addiction to sugar. But so she said, you know, her son was just very moody and almost combative, where she was getting concerned. She changed the breakfast to green smoothies every day and put a bunch of good stuff in it. And she said in about 2 weeks, she had a completely different child. There was no ADD. He was happy. He was smiling. He was friendly. He would give her hugs now. And this goes from a kid who was, you know, probably going to soon be diagnosed with some illness that he really didn't have, just because he wasn't getting the nutrients that he needed. And when you overexcite with all this sugar, it has negative side effects. So if your child is out of control, you know, before you put them on Adderall and all these ADD medications, you might just consider that they're having a nutritional deficiency because they're eating sugar for breakfast, very nutrient deficient school lunches. If they're eating school lunch, it's definitely not adequate. And then they're eating McDonald's or something for dinner. There's going to be a significant nutritional deficiency, which can manifest itself in attitude changes, mood changes, ADD, lack of attention, just general overall bad attitude. Especially if children, I've seen kids very young, like 3, 4, 5, very difficult for them to go to the bathroom to eliminate because they have no fiber in their diet. So they're straining to go to the bathroom at 5 and 6 years old, which is terrible because they're not being fed properly. And so that is, you know, that starts disrupting the digestive tract, setting you up for digestive issues later on that, you know, start manifesting themselves pretty early in the 20s and things like that. And then we develop all these food allergies and things like that. So it all stems from poor nutrition early on. You know, we usually feed our kids pretty good the first year. You know, it's usually breast milk, maybe formula, and then we start feeding them the mashed vegetables, the baby food. And then suddenly the ideas about nutrition seem to go out the window as soon as they're able to chew. It's like, yeah, we were feeding you strained peas and carrots, but now let's hit up the McDonald's. Something happens there. You know,
graduated.
It's like, why would you think it was okay that they were doing well on basically a vegetarian, vegan diet up until they're 2 and not able to chew, and then suddenly now they need hot dogs and hamburgers? You know, so it's a shift in the thinking, really. And that's what, you know, I'm trying to help educate people about, that you have total control over that. You can set your kid up for good health or for struggles.
Well, Doc, if we could talk for a moment, because we have to talk about this, because it happens at such an early age, even before the child is off of the breast, even. You know, they might take some breast milk, okay, put it in a bottle or whatever, and, you know, then stick the bottle in the microwave. I mean, you know, you have people, or even formula, baby formula in the microwave. Could you talk about that, the dangers of the microwave, and especially for children that are being, you don't want to put the baby's bottle in the microwave to warm it. I mean, that's such a common practice today that people do it and don't even think twice about it, much less even after the child is off of the bottle and, you know, just eating regular, for lack of a better term, food. They'll, you know, come home and give them microwave food. Here, take these Hot Pockets, stick it in the refrigerator, the microwave, and eat that. If you could talk about just the microwave and how you don't want to start your child off on that.
Right. Well, the microwave definitely kills all the enzymes in the food. You know, breast milk, especially if you've pumped the milk and and saved it. It's the best food you can give your child. You also want to try to eat healthy while you're breastfeeding too. So, you know, putting it in the microwave kills not only the enzymes, it kills several nutrients, including the vitamin K, which is really important. There's a lot of studies you can go online showing how it kills critical nutrients, and if you repeatedly do that, you're going to create a deficiency, particularly in the vitamin K. So it's dangerous because it heats unevenly, so you have cold and warm spots in the bottle that, you know, are hot regions where everything didn't heat evenly, especially if you're using plastic, then you're introducing more carcinogens into the milk because that leaches from the plastic. So it's just a bad scenario all the way around. You can get bottle warmers. You can do it the old-fashioned way, plan for it, you know, let it sit at room temperature or something. But the microwave is definitely very bad for babies formula and breast milk. It's terrible for it. It really destroys a lot of the benefit of that. So you really don't want to do that. And then with other things, it changes, you know, what might be okay to eat into something that's now carcinogenic. So especially meat, it does that. It changes it. You know, we already want to stay away from meat, but it also changes and brings out the carcinogens in the meat when it's heated very quickly in the microwave. So, you know, I quit using the microwave in 2007. After I learned about that and was diagnosed, and I haven't looked back since. I start using a toaster oven. It takes a little more time, but it's really not a big deal. It's just a change in the way you think, and it's worth it. So you can live without the microwave. Most of the stuff that's designed to be cooked in the microwave usually isn't good stuff anyway. So there are a few, you know, healthy items that you can get at the health food stores, but generally, you mentioned the Hot Pockets and all the snacks and things that are catered toward kids are just going to be high in salt, fat, and sugar just for the addiction purposes. So, yeah, we need to absolutely stay away from the microwave and just do it the old-fashioned way.
You know, it's amazing how even when it comes to music, even how we can be programmed to think that certain things are okay. I remember in rap, even, you had artists that came out and they were very successful, very skilled rappers, but they were marketed, you know, and they were big. I mean, like, for example, Biggie, you know, Biggie Smalls, of course. You had
right.
a guy by the name of Big Pun. There's a rapper by the name of Fat Joe, who's, thank God, he's lost a lot of weight now. But, you know, these were people that would make, let's say, somebody who was young and obese. You know, they're looking at, now this guy's their idol. It's like, you know, we tend to want to be like who we listen to musically, you know. So if your idol is a rapper and he's 400 pounds or 300 pounds and you're, you know, 10 years old and you're 250, you know, you might not feel so bad about yourself, especially if everybody else is listening to the guy who's overweight as well. So, you know, there's just so many different things that go into the perception about obesity, and it's even become almost okay, you know, to be obese, and it's just such a prevalent thing now. You know, I was reading how just even in the United States, everybody, by the way, in the world, the United States ranks number one in obesity, and I'm just going to read the list to you, followed by China. I'm going to give you 10, okay? The list is this. This is the order. The United States is first, China's second, India's third, Russia's fourth, Brazil's fifth, Mexico is sixth, Egypt is seventh, Germany is eighth, Pakistan is ninth, Indonesia is 10th. Now, as I was sharing with Dr. Latham prior to the show, I was shocked that China was number two on the list, because when I think of Chinese and obesity, I think of sumo wrestlers, and I don't see those walking around. So, but Dr. Latham was sharing with me, no, she didn't. That's not surprising. Would you share why, Doc?
Sure, sure. There's a study called the China Study, and it shows quite a bit of different health outcomes based on populations in China. And so they've studied different groups in China, like the rural Chinese who live in the country and live generally the way they did hundreds of years ago. They still, you know, make their tofu the same way. They still eat the rice and grow it the same way. And then they studied the basically the modernized Chinese who have adopted a lot of American ways. You know, we have inundated China with a lot of American fast food restaurants and all the other stuff. So when they compared those populations, and then they also looked at the Chinese who immigrated to America, and those who kept their traditional, what was that?
integrated.
Oh, that, yeah, either one works. Yeah, if they did integrate and act like Americans and eat like Americans versus kept their traditional Chinese habits, that those who fully assimilated and mm-hmm. started eating like we do have the same health outcomes. Whereas those who come to America and keep their traditional ways, lots of unrefined carbohydrates and little meat, tend to stay healthy and slim. And the same thing for in the country itself. Those who are out in the rural areas tend to be very healthy, live a lot longer. And those who live in the cities and have adopted this fast-paced, you know, fast food lifestyle are showing those results, are showing obesity, and not just obesity, but disease, very similar to America. So to me, that tells me it's about the food. So, you know, Chinese, you know, lots of people are really trying to, they idolize America. They idolize our fast food places, all the commercials that are so, you know, just everywhere and are hip and cool. And they tailor those same commercials in those countries to capture their youth and their folks as well. And so that's really what's happened. They have adopted a very similar lifestyle, food-based lifestyle to us, if nothing else. And that definitely contributes more than anything else. What you eat is going to contribute to your weight and health more than anything else. It is the number one factor, much greater than exercise. So you can exercise off calories, but you can't exercise off, you know, your saturated fat and cholesterol and those other things that are clogging the arteries. It's very difficult to do that. So that's why, you know, even if they're more active, they can still end up obese because of the type of food that's being consumed.
Well, Dr. Lisa, see these lines. They are lit up. If you have a question and you'd like to make a comment, all you have to do is press 1, and I can bring you on board, and you can ask your question of Dr. Ruby Lathan. This is a powerful interview. We're talking about childhood obesity, overcoming childhood obesity. Doc, we have to, if you could, just really, we want to drive home the point about the risks, the risk factors. You know, if you don't do something and you notice, for example, that your child is overweight, the odds of the child just growing out of that, you know, just that just being baby fat. You really need to monitor that, because with, like Dr. Lathan was saying, with all of the stuff that we're giving the kids now, the sugar and all of these things that could contribute to obesity, along with that obesity, there are some very, very serious health factors. Correct, Doc?
Absolutely, there are. And, you know, we can make a distinction between just a little bit chubby and obese. I mean, that's why the chart is there. There's, you know, our little chubbiness, there's overweight, and there's obesity. We really shouldn't wait till it's obesity, because we can see overweight for a long time before it hits obesity. So, you know, we don't have to be overly sensitive for, you know, kids that's just a little bit chubby in the face or something like that, who, you know, eats relatively healthy. You don't want to develop a complex about it, but it's up to you to just change the diet, you know, change the diet and make it better. It is up to the parent, in my opinion. If you have an overweight child, it is not up to the child to do something. They're not grocery shopping. They're not making money. They're not deciding how it's being spent. You are. So you have to do something, and the earlier the better. It really is the parent's responsibility to address it and address it soon. Even if the parent themselves are overweight, that doesn't mean that you just let your kids follow your footsteps, because you know it doesn't feel good to be overweight. You know you'd rather be slim too. So at least let's give the kid a better head start.
You know, doctor, I want to pick up on that for a second, just because, you know, there are people who will actually blame the child, their own child, for being overweight. Now, the child might already be dealing with low self-esteem. Now, if the child is viewing the parent's reaction to them as being one of disgust, you know, like, you just disgust me with your weight, you're just so fat, you know, that type of behavior towards the child will make that child feel unloved. And as a result of that, we talked about earlier briefly how that might feel, now the child might make the child eat more, you know, because they, mm-hmm. you know, feeling the need to somehow compensate for the lack of love perceived lack of love that they are getting from their parents. Could you talk about the need that if you do have a child that's overweight and it's already overweight, okay, you did the wrong things nutritionally. You didn't give the mm-hmm. child the right things. And now you have an obese toddler. You have a child that may be or in the first or second or third or fourth grade and they're obese. The importance in not making the child feel worse about their condition by showing your disdain, showing your disgust, but actually now loving the child enough and being dedicated enough to the health of your child to even make the changes necessary in your own lifestyle so that you can get your child back on track.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't believe in fat shaming or making people feel bad about it. We just have to do something about it. It doesn't help to feel, you know, it definitely is terrible to make your child feel bad, especially when it's your responsibility to feed them. There's no way you can really blame them, even if, you know, they're, you know, 12 years old and now they're sneaking food and you're saying, well, that's why they're overweight. There might have been something that you could have done. So it's really not about blame at this point. It's about addressing the problem. So you absolutely want to make them feel loved and beautiful and everything, because that really is independent of weight, absolutely. So the worst thing you can do is make them feel subconscious about themselves and bad, and for yourself also. And so I know a lot of parents who are overweight themselves, so they don't really know what to do to lose weight, so they just let their kids, you know, follow suit. So it's really important to do something, you know, to save yourself and your child in this process. So, you know, let your child be the motivation to say, okay, it's time we stop ordering all these pizzas and things and all of that. Let's start eating healthy so we can all be healthier and be around for each other. So you can definitely let that be your motivation to make the change if the whole family is having this problem. And then a lot of times, you know, I'll hear mom say, well, you know, my husband's not going to do this. I'm like, just you do it. You make the change for you, and they will come along eventually. But don't let that be an excuse because you don't think he's going to eat healthy or he's still going to order whatever. You just do what you need to do to save your own life and your child's life, and he'll come along.
What about fasting in children, doctor? Because fasting for a lot of people is, you know, there are some groups of people that fast ever since they were young. You know, they were taught to fast. They grew up fasting. It's a normal thing for them, especially in the spiritual communities. But for those who don't know anything about fasting and they do have an obese child, would you recommend fasting? And if you would recommend fasting for a child, at what age would be a good place to start, and what age would you not want to go below?
Generally, it's not recommended for fasting in children. So, you know, definitely not under 13. You wouldn't want to do any fasting. It's just not really safe, you know, because they're still developing. I mean, it can be very healthy, but it's just not recommended.
Okay.
You know, at that age. Probably later teen years, you know, 15, 16, can do short fasts, you know. But generally we're talking about juice fasting. So it's not that they're not going to get any nutrition. They're just going to get liquid nutrition, which, you know, at a young age, it can affect you. You could feel a little different, you know, because there's a greater, higher need for calories when you're growing. So, and juicing is a very low calorie diet, for example. So you wouldn't want to do it for very long, you know, and you really wouldn't want to use fasting as a weight loss tool. Fasting is really more for cleansing, and it has the effect of you know, helping you lose weight in the process. But in order to really keep weight off, you have to learn how to eat again, eat differently, and fasting doesn't really teach you that. Fasting just says you're not going to be eating, you're going to be drinking for a while. So it doesn't really teach you the lasting things you need to learn to lose weight, and it's only recommended for a very short time for younger people, so, you know, you wouldn't lose that much weight anyway. Now, if you're dealing with, like, a health issue, like a teenager has, you know, ulcerative colitis or, you know, something like that, now, that's different. We should do a fast, and we should do it supervised with a holistic health coach or a naturopathic physician or someone who's going to be monitoring. That's a different scenario, but not for weight loss. We really want to just change the eating habits. And you can do more things like have more smoothies, which retain all the calories, but it's going to be lower calories, but it retains all the nutrients and the fiber and things like that. So you could maybe substitute like a smoothie for dinner or something like that. You know, have a regular lunch, you know, have a smoothie for breakfast or dinner. But generally, you know, now it's fine to have juices maybe in addition to eating, like as a meal replacement at night. So if you want to do, you know, to cut your calories, you're eating, you know, a good breakfast and lunch. In the evening, you want to have a vegetable juice that you juiced for dinner. That would be fine for a younger person to do that, because they're still getting the calories and the fiber and everything earlier on. And so then they're just adding quite a bit of nutrition with the juice.
Well, Doc, if you could talk about the Veggie Chest for a moment. You host a show called The Veggie Chest, where you actually teach people how to make the transition from a fast food diet, a meat diet, to a healthy, holistic, plant-based diet. Could you talk about the Veggie Chest and how people can tune into that? Because for a lot of people that are hearing this show, and they're like, well, okay, I cannot argue with anything that the doctor said. She's right on point. I agree with her. I have a child, and I know my child is obese, and I know I need to do something about it, and I just need to know where to start. I mean, she said I shouldn't be eating McDonald's or Wendy's or these fast food places, no processed food, no meats and dairy, but now what do I eat, and, you know, how do I learn to prepare this so that it tastes good? So with that said, could you talk about the Veggie Chest so that people can know that they're not in this alone and that you can help them with that process?
Sure. Veggie Chest is a cooking show, plant-based cooking show that uses whole foods, real foods, shows you how to make them. They're really short videos, but it gives you everything you need. So if you go to YouTube and put in the Veggie Chest, you'll find it, or you can go to my website, rubylathan.com, where you'll find the recipes as well and the videos there, and you can just watch it and get an idea of the type of foods and then choose some and give it a try. So it's definitely, you know, I try to use recipes that are very easy to use, so they're not too complicated, so the regular person can give them a try. So, yeah, just check it out, The Veggie Chest on YouTube or Ruby Lathan, RubyLathon.com.
Everybody, this has been a fabulous, fabulous show. I am so thankful to have had the opportunity to bring to you Dr. Ruby Lathan. If you have a question, this is your last chance to dance, okay? All you have to do is press 1, and I can bring you on, and you can ask your question of Dr. Ruby Lathan. It's been a very, very fast hour. If you're listening online, the number's 347-324-5727. That's 347-324-5727. If we could talk about, lastly, Doctor, the risks. If you do the things that Dr. Lathan outlined in this interview. If you do the recommendations that she spoke about, then you're going to have a healthy result. But what happens if they don't, Doctor? Could you talk about the risks involved in a child being obese and what that can lead to?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there are a lot of risks. I mean, as I mentioned, basically there's a lot of early onset of diseases, like, you know, from obesity comes along with a lot of illnesses, which one, a major one being diabetes, then kidney failure. So that's why we see so many people on dialysis, because it started out as obesity, which led to diabetes, which led to kidney failure. So that's one track that could happen. Again, it's just poor health overall, low energy. And then, you know, early onset of these diseases like heart disease and others, there's, you know, higher risk of cancers with obesity. There's higher risk of pretty much all of the illnesses that we suffer with when you're obese. So you're basically stacking the deck against them when you do that. So we have to know that the risk for every illness pretty much goes up with obesity. So that's the risk that we're facing by doing nothing.
Everybody, my special guest today has been Dr. Ruby Lathan. We're talking about child obesity and how you can overcome it. If you have a child that's overweight and you need to know what to do, where do I begin, how do I reverse this, you know, I've tried everything, the child just won't stop eating whatever it is that they want to eat. The child just won't eat vegetables, you know, they refuse to eat vegetables. There's nothing I can do, you know. Then what do you do, doctor, if you have a situation like that where they just say the child refuses, the child just won't eat vegetables, they don't like salad, they're 10 years old, and I can't make them eat. I can't stuff it down their throat, and I can't beat it into them. What do I do?
You know, that's a good question. It really comes down to parenting skills and how you're going to handle that. I know growing up, I didn't really have an option of what I was and wasn't going to eat. So, you know, I know times have changed. I do remember sitting at the table for hours because I didn't want to eat my peas. So I do know that you can have strong-willed kids and they're just not going to eat it. But first, we have to look at how it's prepared. I mean, I ate greens all the time. I just didn't like peas. So I don't believe in forcing that issue. We have to give them a spectrum. If you know they don't like peas, let's give them broccoli. But they got to choose something. So generally, you know, it comes down to the psychology with kids. They want to sometimes feel like they have a choice. You know, it depends on your parenting style. So it's like we're in the grocery store. We're going to have broccoli or green beans. Which do you want? Not, are you going to eat this? It's which do you want? Because we're going to have one of these. So the choice is not no. The choice is which one. That's where the choice is. In my opinion, that's how I would do it. That's how, you know, I was, and I see other successful parents doing it that way. Number two, let's make sure it tastes good. Let's, you know, jazz it up a little bit. Let's do a healthy dip with it. Usually younger kids, if they help you make it, they will eat it. So I usually have, like, kids help me make a dish. I've had kids eat all kinds of things that kids don't normally like just because they helped make it. So they're going to want to, they're proud of it. They're going to want to try it. So get them in the kitchen helping you is one thing. And then making sure you're not just putting some bland food on the plate and expecting them to like it. You know, we do have to tailor it to look good and taste good too. And sometimes some healthy dipping sauces that I do, like with cashews or something. You know, we don't want to do the ranch dressing because it's got a lot of junk in it. But something like that from the healthy side to help them, you know, develop a taste for the greens. And then when you stop feeding them everything else, you know, the options get slim.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to die of, you know, in a week because they didn't eat, you know, dinner. You know, when you say this is what we're having, you know, sometimes you got to dig your heels in and they'll come around. So.
What about the dessert, Dr. Lashley? Because, again, a lot of times we've been talking primarily about the main dishes, you know, for dinner, breakfast mm-hmm. and lunch. But what about dessert? Because a lot of times, especially now with the holidays coming up, you're going to have Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's, and everybody's going to be coming together to fellowship and to eat. And one of the most looked forward to portions of that holiday season is the dessert, the cakes and the pies and, you know, all of that. So when it comes to dessert, I know that you, again, are a proponent of a vegetarian vegan lifestyle. You can also teach people how to actually make desserts that are delicious but don't contain all of the harmful additives and things that are helping to make our children obese.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot you can do with dessert. I mean, you really want to focus on fruits and stay away from a bunch of added sugar and lots of cakes and cookies and things like that. But you can make them in a healthy version. I do that all the time. There's something I make, banana ice cream, which is just frozen bananas with a different flavor, whether it's raw cacao powder or mango or something, or peaches. It tastes just like ice cream, but it's bananas. So you really can't go wrong with that. So, yeah, you can have sweets. You just have to do the healthy version, absolutely. There's a lot of recipes for that. You know, popsicles that have all fruit and not juice and things to them. Again, you can help your kids, you know, let them help you make that. You can make healthy milkshakes that doesn't contain milk, but uses nuts or almond milk or coconut or something like that. Yes, so there's tons of options. You want to focus more on the fruits as sweeteners, and then using fruit as the dessert, like a bowl of berries or something as dessert sometimes, and not some processed, you know, cookie or something.
Mm-hmm. I've got one more question, I promise. Exercise. A lot of people, you know, when they think about losing weight, the first thing they feel like, I got to get to the gym. You know, that's the main thing. I mean, if you took a poll, someone says, how do you lose weight? They probably be like, I got to go work out. Okay. For children who are obese, you know, I noticed that Michelle Obama has this Get Fit, for lack of a better term. I can't think of what she actually called
Let's
it,
move.
But a Get
uh-huh.
Fit program for, mm-hmm. you know, combating childhood obesity as well, you know, getting folks moving again, you know, exercising. And at what point, at what age is a good age to start your child exercising?
I mean, kids normally just exercise on their own from an early age. They're very fidgety. They want to run around. If you let them outside, they just exercise. We don't have to do these structured exercise for kids. You just got to take them to a playground. I mean, for young kids, I think that's all that's needed. You take them outside, and they will exercise. So I don't think we need that real formalized, we're going to exercise kind of thing. Yeah, I don't think that's necessary for young kids. You know, anywhere we're talking from toddlers to, you know, 7 years old, you give them a playground, they're going to do the monkey bars, the swings, they're going to be running all over the place. They naturally exercise. We just have to give them the opportunity to do that. You know, for older kids who you know, have developed a habit of not moving, you know, number one, we could get them involved in some sports that create it naturally, that makes it a little more fun to move. And then you could, you know, develop an exercise program just to make sure they're getting out. You know, biking is good, that kind of thing, some aerobic type thing, basketball. You know, it doesn't have to be so structured. It doesn't have to be the gym per se for young kids. I don't really think that's necessary. But you can make sure they're moving and exercising and working up a sweat for the older kids. That's really what's needed. And then in conjunction with the food. So the exercise is important. You know, for older kids, you know, like 12, 13, yeah, they can do some formalized exercise. But I also think they should be doing some kind of sports or something that makes it fun, too.
Mm-hmm. Everybody, I just want to say this has been a very, very powerful, powerful interview. Doctor, I appreciate you extending the time a little bit, and I appreciate everybody that's tuned in and listening. Dr. Lathan is a regular on Juwanza for Life. She comes on once a month, and I want you to know that if you missed last month's show with Dr. Lathan, you've got to go into the archives and listen to it. It's called Overcoming Obesity. The time is now. Are you ready? This show today was for childhood obesity. But the show prior with Dr. Lathan was for just obesity and just, you know, in general dealing with adults, but we specified it today to deal with children. But if you are an adult and you are dealing with a weight issue, go back, listen to the archives, just scroll down the list, you'll find it. It's called Overcoming Obesity. The time is now. Are you ready? With Dr. Ruby Lathan, and I guarantee you that you will be inspired to take matters into your own hands and make the changes that are necessary for you to get back to you. Dr. Lathan, I really appreciate your time. It's always a pleasure speaking with you. You're always very insightful and always on point with your suggestions. Any parting words for our listeners tonight?
You know, just be encouraged, and, you know, the best thing is to do is just to take action, not wallow in any guilt, but just go ahead and take some action and make it happen, and know that the kids will respond really quickly to whatever changes you make. So just get informed, get the right information, go to my website, get recipes and information about how to do it, and then make it happen.
Everybody, my special guest today has been Dr. Ruby Lathan. Again, make sure you check out the Veggie Chest. Again, go to the website, rubylathan.com. And again, this is an epidemic. This whole obesity thing is really gotten out of hand. I mean, again, in the U.S., 70% of men and 60% of women are obese or overweight, and that's the highest number of obese people in the world. And it's being reflected in our children, and it's time to do something about it. And to that end, we present this show and this information. Again, go back and listen to Overcoming Obesity. The time is now. Are you ready? With Dr. Ruby Lathan, and be inspired to make the changes necessary to get back to you. My name is Juwanza, and we have a fabulous archives. I want everybody to know, if you go back to the archives, you can hear shows. As a matter of fact, the night before last, we interviewed Dr. Ted Watkins, and he spoke upon overcoming adrenal fatigue. If you didn't know what adrenal fatigue was, listen to that show. You'll know what it is when Dr. Ted Watkins gets finished breaking it down. He's a regular on Juwanza for Life now, thanks to Dr. Ruby Lathan. And we do shows on every disease that you can name, every disease you can think of. We've touched upon it. Overcoming lupus. You know somebody that's got lupus? Dr. Lathan did a show on lupus, Overcoming Lupus. Go back to the archives. Just scroll down, and I guarantee you that there's going to be something for you and somebody that you know. Again, thank you, everybody, for your time. I truly don't take you for granted. You could be doing something else, but you took time out to tune in and spend an hour with myself and Dr. Ruby Lathan. Awesome, awesome interview, Dr. Lathan. I appreciate you, and I'll be in touch with you soon. Dr. Lathan? Okay.
Absolutely.
Dr. Lathan
is... Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Thank you you so much. I'll be in touch. Have a great evening.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Everybody, again, that was Dr. Ruby Lathan. I hope you enjoyed the show. Again, you don't have to suffer with obesity. Your children don't have to suffer with obesity. You heard the information today. I know it inspired you. You can do something that can actually change the course of your child's life. There are children in school that are ridiculed because they're overweight. They develop low self-esteem because they're overweight. And oftentimes, they're just eating because it's what's in front of them. Okay? You can make a difference in your child's development, how they grow up, feeling about themselves, whether they grow up loving themselves, whether they grow up feeling inadequate with low self-esteem. Part of being obese is going to be a side effect of that. So go back, listen to the show again. If this show wasn't for you and you know somebody that has an obese child, share this link with them. It didn't come to your ears for no reason. I don't believe in accidents in the universe. You're hearing this for a reason. So even if you're not obese, you're still hearing it for a reason. So ask yourself, what is the reason that I'm hearing this? Maybe I know somebody that's obese. Maybe I know somebody that's got a child that's obese, and they can benefit from this information. Please, share the information with them. My name's Juwanza. You've been listening to Juwanza for Life. I truly appreciate you. Thank you for listening. Peace.